If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I am one of your hosts, Adam Pranica.
Over here is your other host, Benjamin R. Harrison.
Ben, we did something this morning that might be a fun gag for the live show.
Oh, yeah?
Which is me just leaving you hanging for about 15 minutes after we were supposed to start.
Yeah, that. I'm sure that our ticket holders, our paid customers, would really enjoy that.
Yeah. Yeah. Fill time, Ben.
Stretch. Stretch. at Max FunCon East this year, there was like a miscommunication. I don't even remember which podcast it was, but like one of the hosts didn't know they were supposed to be on stage and had to be summoned from sleep to being on.
Oh boy. That's almost like the nightmare of being in class without any clothes on, like the idea of being woken up,
yeah,
to be roused and then sent to class immediately. That's tough.
Tough stuff. We'll be doing our best to be on and great, you know, with a
and clothed.
Yeah, and with a, you know, with a full night's sleep behind us.
Hopefully.
I'm getting excited about this. I'm not going to lie. I guess, wait, when do these episodes go out? It's so hard when we record so far in the future to know, like, what context this will be heard in. Maybe our live show has already happened. Who knows?
This episode that we're recording right now is coming out on the first day of our tour. This episode is coming out on Monday, November 14th.
Man.
But we shouldn't say that because these shows are supposed to live forever, these podcasts.
That's true. Yeah. Forget you heard that, fair viewer. Forget it ever happened. Shall we get into this episode?
Yeah, let's do it. It's season 4, episode 11, Data's Day.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
This episode felt like a totally different show to me.
Yeah.
Before we even start, like, it is as if the showrunners just left the set and someone wandered on and was like, it would be fun to make a Star Trek The Next Generation show.
Hey, look at this. We got all these actors. We got this set. What do you guys think? Should we make a show?
Yeah. I think we'll get into this idea more as we progress, but wow, this was a crazy diversion from basically every other episode we've watched, I thought.
Yeah, structurally very different. Shows that they're willing to take a risk at this point, you know? So we open up, and it is the evening shift or the night shift. And I really liked this. It was like nice mood lighting on the bridge.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if I would want if I was working the graveyard. Like oh, it's not a normal time to be awake, and also the lights are super dim. Like, I guess your circadian rhythm can really be whatever you want it to be on a starship, right?
When I have had the displeasure of working graveyard, it's always been in like a retail environment, and so like the hottest possible fluorescent lights have been on.
Yeah.
On me at like 3 a.m, and I found that helpful. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would be as productive if the lights were dimmed down low.
That's why you have that thick, rich head of hair, right? You've been under those glow lamps,
yeah,
the whole time.
It's true.
Yeah,
it isn't an accident.
So the premise of this episode, which we get like right off the bat in a second officer's log, is that Data is writing a letter about a day in the life to Commander Maddox. Commander Maddox is the guy that wanted to dismantle him and figure out how he worked, and until Lawyer Picard stepped in.
And it's great that they're such good friends after he tried to kill him, right?
Well, I detected a little bit of shade thrown in Data's letter. Like, I agree that your study lacks any source material, so I'm going to do you a little solid, little buddy.
Why would Data help him get source material if all Maddox is going to do with that source material is use it to take apart Data later on?
I don't know, man. I think that Data knows that he's, like, just out of Maddox's league now, but he's, like, he's going to send him a sexy pic just to tease him a little bit.
Yeah.
So this is a big episode. It introduces Keiko, Chief O'Brien's special lady friend. And the first scene, once Commander Data is relieved on the bridge, is him talking to Keiko, and she's like,
I'm calling off the wedding.
And so he's like,
will canceling the wedding make you happy?
Yes.
And Data takes that literally.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Data has the sum of all human history and an existence in his brain, like he does not understand that calling off a wedding 99% of the time is actually a bad thing.
Yeah.
And so he's like arm swinging into 10 forward, like ready to drop the news to O'Brien. It's like, hey buddy,
I have good news.
And I love the way he phrases this, because it's like he bakes in his misunderstanding into how he breaks the news to O'Brien.
Keiko has made a decision designed to increase her happiness. She has canceled the wedding.
But then O'Brien just takes it like, fuck!
It's a great O'Brien moment.
Yeah. This episode really, it's as much about O'Brien and Keiko, who, you know, become big characters on this show, and then, you know, main cast on Deep Space Nine, and it from jump is basically about how fucked up their relationship is.
Yeah,
like they don't know each other.
It feels like an arranged marriage.
Yeah, it does.
And I don't think we can be sure that it's not. We're never given any proof to the contrary.
Yeah, but like, I don't think they have a single scene in this episode until, spoiler alert, the end. But, you know, like the entire time they're like passing messages between each other via Data, and it's very strange. It is totally alien to my experience of human weddings, you know?
Yeah, I wanted to see their meet cute, and I imagine it's just Keiko beaming on and off the ship a bunch of times.
You think O'Brien is just in the transporter room and they tell him, like, beam up this civilian botanist, and he swipes up, sees her, goes like rubs his eyes, swipes down, beams her back down, swipes back up, and is like, hubba 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 hubba, swipes back down, swipes back up, ahooga.
I think Transporter Chief might be a couple steps up from TSA agent. And as he's swiping, he's seeing everything.
I've seen everything. You know, I've seen it all.
Mm, yeah.
We understand the context of Keiko and O'Brien's relationship from the context of conflict.
Like, yeah.
That's how we know them.
Yeah.
Which doesn't feel good. I don't think.
No, it sure doesn't.
Because I want to like O'Brien. I've wanted to like O'Brien from the start. And here we are, like 10 minutes into the ep. It made me nervous for Colm Meaney because we're like in the middle of season 4. He's finally getting a shot. He's getting his battle episode. Right. And I want him to do well. And he is just getting shit on as a character. It's not looking good for Chief O'Brien.
Yeah. Well, you know, the characters you love most, you put them through the hardest stuff, right?
Yeah, it's true.
So I guess the deal is Data works like an entire night shift, and then because he doesn't need to sleep, he basically kills time for the rest of the day. So like a whole bunch of his day when he's not doing mission is like farting around, like watching people get their hair cut and like, you know, standing creepily in the corner while a pregnant woman gets her belly examined. But his first order of business after dumping cold water on the chief's head is going and receiving Ambassador T'Pel of Vulcan, who beams on in full, like, ceremonial regalia and, you know, kind of coldly says, "We're going to go talk to your captain right now."
I don't recall, but it appears that she needs a cargo transporter to accommodate her giant hat.
She has full Pope hat.
Yeah.
She's got kind of like, it's like if
"Hey, T'Pel, how's the Popin'?"
It's like if Darth Vader had a couple of pops of color in his robes.
Yeah.
And then put on a Pope hat, you know?
It doesn't help that she's not nice to anyone.
Yeah.
I think, like, you can forgive a tall hat if under the tall hat is a nice person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's possible to be cool but nice. Like, she's cool and just confrontational.
It is possible to be professional and nice also. Like, I think we've run into these people a bunch in our adventures, Ben.
Absolutely.
Especially in the production community.
Yeah. I mean, this is something we talk about a lot. Like, you know, people make all these accommodations for Vulcan culture, and the Vulcans never make any accommodations for human culture.
Yeah.
Really,
it's kind of fucked up.
They think their green shit doesn't stink.
And in fact, it stinks worse.
The whole deal here, we got two kind of storylines running in parallel. One is Data has been assured by Geordi that despite all news to the contrary, O'Brien and Keiko are gonna get married, and he better sort out a gift. And meanwhile, they're Ubering this Vulcan ambassador to the neutral zone because she is going to open up negotiations designed to normalize relations between the Federation and the Romulans, which is a big deal.
The circumstance surrounding this Uber mission for the Enterprise seems pretty questionable from the jump, right? Like, it's a total secret.
Yeah.
Secret ambassador, secret run to the neutral zone, secret meet up with the Romulan ship. Like, if this was really about a coming peace, like, backing up a little bit, like, whenever there is some sort of peace negotiation, is secrecy ever a correct strategy? Like, I feel like in a conventional modern context, when we're trying to negotiate peace, the whole idea is everything on the table, above board, like, out in the open.
Yeah.
Like, this is good for peace. But this sort of feels like some real back channel, red phone to red phone negotiating here that seems a little uncharacteristic of what the Federation does.
Well, you know what they say, Adam. Only T'Pel could go to Romulus.
That's what they all say.
Yeah. No, I mean, I know what you mean. And from a standpoint of just canon, like, inconsistent with many other episodes about the Federation trying to negotiate peace. Like, they do what you're saying. Like, they try to be, you know, transparent and honest about it. And T'Pol is always like kicking Data and Riker out of the ready room, or, you know, she's very like, she's very cagey, and you know, clearly Captain Picard's getting big dogged a lot. Like, she big dogs Data the second she beams up and is just going around bigging all of the dogs she can find.
And as secret as this mission appears to be, like, Data has no problem spilling that to Maddox in his log. He's like, we're transporting a very asshole-y Vulcan ambassador to some sort of peace negotiations.
Yeah, maybe he, you know, is going to store this in drafts and then only hit send when he knows that it's going to be okay.
That never comes back to bite anyone.
Yeah. I feel like I would trust Data with a reply all function, though, right? Like, he wouldn't mess that up. He would never hit the wrong button.
Data messes up a lot of shit, though.
Yeah, but that not that kind of shit.
If Dr. Seung sent him a beacon message that caused him to send all of his drafts, it seems like something Dr. Seung would do, by the way. Like, that would be a huge disaster for everyone.
Yeah.
Can't have it.
Seung may or may not have bought the farm at this point. We don't even know.
No. It's impossible to say.
It is a guiding principle of Darth Vader's base. Have you not find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth? You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
So, yeah. So, the meanwhile, Data is trying to get ready for this wedding. Somebody like drops into conversation that he's going to have to dance because he's playing the role of father of the bride at this wedding, which I'm not clear if Keiko doesn't have parents or if just because it's on a starship, she gets to kind of pick someone. There's a lot of retroactive continuity going on in this episode also. Like, at one point, O'Brien tells Data, like, oh, like, you've known Keiko much longer than I have. And it's like, O'Brien, you were on the first episode of this show. This is the first we've seen Keiko.
It wouldn't have taken much to give us just a little bit more about Keiko. Like, why aren't her parents on board? Are they estranged? Were they killed?
Yeah.
Like,
everybody
anything.
Else is an orphan. Why not her?
But because Keiko's a woman, they give her the commensurate amount of backstory on this show.
Yeah.
She's really into flowers.
She's in a relationship.
You know who's great at dancing? Beverly.
Yeah, so, yeah, this is maybe the most fun part of the episode, as Data goes and asks Dr. Crusher,
would you teach me to dance?
And she, like, shoves him into her office and slams the door behind her. She's like,
what?
Who told you that? He's like, oh, like, I looked up your service record, and it says you won some dance awards. And so they make a holodeck program where they do, like, this whole tap routine. And he's like, great, cool, this is going to be awesome for the wedding. And she's like, whoa. You don't tap dance in a wedding. And my head was just filled with images of like, everybody in Starfleet uniforms at a wedding tap dancing.
I feel like that's the thing that you don't see on viral wedding videos is the Gregory Hines-esque, fully choreographed wedding tap dance moment.
The groom, the bride, and a cast of thousands tap dancing in sync. Yeah.
Yeah, if I had to do mine all over again, I think I might have introduced some tapping.
So this dance scene ends with the doctor getting called away because a baby is being born. And she's like, all right, you need to, like, learn how to do ballroom dance or, like, a waltz. So program yourself a dance partner and just do holodeck. And Data programs this up. And it's at this moment that I realized that Data holodeck is way creepier than Geordi holodeck. Because he gets in dance pose with this woman and they start waltzing. And as they turn around, he turns to camera and he has the creepiest SEG on his face of all time.
He's got that school dance photo smile where he's just smiling with his mouth and not with his eyes.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
It's what you call an SEG, Adam.
I don't know what that is.
It's a shit-eating grin.
Oh, I get it now.
the ship meets up with these Romulans, and they are...
This Romulan ship is called the Divorce. Did you pick up on that?
I didn't. Is that really what it's called?
Kind of an ominous sign for Keiko and our pal O'Brien, I feel like.
That's a bad star to be born under.
Yeah.
So, and the Romulan aboard this ship is Mendek, and he's real Uxbridge-y, you know? He's like, he's just got like an even tone, like doesn't emote at all. And is he like Hans Gruber?
Yeah, he's a little bit Grubery.
Yeah, he's got some Gruber to him.
Yeah.
You'll give me that much, won't you?
I'll give you that much.
What is it you humans say? Yippee-ki-yay.
His breadbox cover seems a little bit more tailored than what we usually see. In the NFL shoulder pad parlance, like there's the giant pads of like the linemen.
Yeah.
This captain appears to be wearing like the kicking pads, which are just barely there.
Yeah, he just has the one bar going across his face mask because he doesn't really need like full mask, but regulation says he has to have one.
Yeah, he's not really going to be tackling anyone unless it's an emergency.
Yeah. I wonder if they just put some binder clips on the back of his uniform and left it at that.
I think that's fair. I mean, when you're on FaceTime, you're only going to be showing the front.
One thing I noticed about FaceTime in this episode is when they're looking, and I've seen this a couple of other times, but I don't know if we've talked about it. When they're looking, you know, directly at the view screen, it's like eye to eye, unlike FaceTime, which is like, you know, the camera is like a little bit above what you're looking at. Like they're making eye contact with the screen. When you go to a side angle, they cut to a side angle on the view screen, which means the view screen is 3D.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty great. Which also means on a production level, they've got to shoot it like in multiple ways.
Like that is tricky eyeline to nail, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
But they do a nice job of it. Who knows? I don't know. I like the idea that it's three-dimensional, though. Like you're standing on the bridge looking into this other bridge, and it just feels like a room that's on the other side of that window.
That's pretty great headcanon. My love is a fever.
Data has been pretty suspicious of T'Pel because, I don't know, like, I think he was suspicious of her from jump. Like, there's definitely a scene when she's first headed to the bridge with him, or they're in the turbo lift, and he's just, like, peeping on her.
Tommy, how's it peeping?
Like, they're standing really close to each other, and he's just looking over, like, uneasily at her. And then there's this scene sort of right before they meet up with the Romulans where she calls him into her quarters and attempts to ply him for like restricted information about how the shields work or something. And he's like,
I must report any inquiry regarding restricted information to the captain.
And she's like, oh no, I was just testing your security protocols. So
she's like, can I ask you in incognito mode?
Yeah, exactly. And I thought it was weird that Data didn't run that up the flagpole and be like, hey, Picard, just so you know, T'Pel was asking about the field integrity or whatever. Thought it was weird, thought you should know.
Well, this is like the contradiction of that rule that really blew me away, which is like Data says, if you request information like that, I must by rule alert the captain. And she's like, okay, then I retract my request. And then Data seems fine to be like, okay, then I retract the need to tell the captain. Like it doesn't undo the ask initially, and the whole reason that he should have to tell the captain is not negated by her suddenly withdrawing the question.
Yeah, it's like in chess, if you like move a piece and then you take your hand off it and they go, oh, never mind, and you move it back and move another piece.
Yeah.
No bueno.
She took her hand off of the piece.
Yeah.
And Data should have to go tell.
Yeah. One in a long line of weird misunderstandings of how security works in this show. But so they beam T'Pel over to this Romulan ship. She's going to go start negotiating with this admiral. and the transporter starts like farting mid beam. And O'Brien is like, fuck, oh shit.
I'm losing the pattern. Trying to reestablish.
He's almost break up the wedding angry. But yeah. I would argue a little less angry than that. He was angrier in 10 Forward earlier.
Let's just say O'Brien's day is not going great.
The ambassador's dead.
And yeah, so they're like, God, what was that even?
They do this entire scene off camera too. Like, all you see are the reactions from Picard and Riker, right?
Yeah, I guess so. And they mount an investigation where Data's in charge. And it's like, it's one of those great scenes where Picard is like handing out assignments. And he's like, we're going to get to the bottom of this. And Data's on like the overall investigation. Geordi and O'Brien are working on the transporter. The doctor, you know, collects the little like green dust that's been left on the transporter pad and says like,
she's
yeah,
swabbing
some stuff.
For mist.
Right. There's some stuff here, but it's not, you know, like I can't do a Y incision on this. No autopsy. So yeah, they're like, God, like I can't believe that the transporter just killed like this super important Federation ambassador. It's never happened before. It doesn't make any sense. And Data has the idea to run a DNA scan on the material that they found. And it turns out that there are the kinds of flaws in the DNA that you would get if you tried to replicate somebody's DNA. So they hold a little McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
And they basically have discovered that instead of there being a transporter accident, the Romulans beamed T'Pel off the ship while simultaneously beaming on some mist to make them think that she had been destroyified by a transporter accident.
They couldn't leave her hat behind, though.
That would have been fun. Yeah. So
the way that the Ferengis beamed out Troy and her mom in that one scene, like right out of her clothes.
Yeah, exactly.
Before she can get her knickers on, I've seen everything.
They're like, oh, we've pulled that trick before. We can't do that again.
Yeah.
So the Enterprise pulls an E-brake and also like the Ferengi, and heads back to the neutral zone where the divorce is still floating around. And they're like, hey, what was that about? Like, you guys...
Picard, like, holds up two fingers that he has just, like, wiped on the bottom of the transporter pad. He's like, can you explain this?
And you tried to pull a fast one on us. Like, what's the big idea? Mendek is... he's a very different kind of guy than your Tomalak, you know? He doesn't seem to, like, relish the game of deceiving the Federation.
He's far more robotic than any other Romulan we've run into before. Like, yeah. With other Romulans, the things that they say are often very flat, but their delivery is menacing. The thing with Mendek is that his delivery is also very flat. As flat as what he's saying. And so there's just not a lot there.
Yeah.
Which I think serves the reveal that's coming.
Right. Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. It would have been fun if Tomalak was there. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
But yeah, they call him on this bullshit and he's like, well, you caught us. And Picard is like, well, if you're holding her prisoner, like we're going to fight you for her. You know, this is a pretty grievous...
Blah, blah, blah,
breach.
Act of aggression. Blah, blah,
yeah.
Blah.
Blah, 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 fighting words.
Yeah. Blah, blah, blah.
You're slipping into a coma at this point. And he's like, oh, no, like, she's not a prisoner. She's actually one of us. And he, like, gestures off camera. And
the entire bridge crew drops their mugs right now.
Yeah. Yes, a lot of slow motion of tea Earl Grey hot going into the pile of the carpet. The stains are not going to come out easy.
Yeah,
and she does like a little grapevine on screen, slides up next to Mendok, and she's like, yeah, turns out I wasn't an ambassador. I was a Romulan the whole time. And they're like, Jesus.
We sure had you fooled. We look exactly the same. Couldn't you tell?
It really made me wonder, like, how long she'd been an ambassador. Like, had she negotiated treaties for the Federation in order to maintain this disguise?
She's really terrible at keeping cover if she was so close to blowing it with Data earlier on the ship. Like, I don't think she was a very great spy if she was willing to get caught asking a pretty benign security question to Data.
Yeah. Well, and also just like, what would an ambassador know that the Federation doesn't want the Romulans to know?
Yeah. It seems like if you're trying to get info, like, is that really the place at the table you want?
Yeah.
Anytime they talk about security shit, you got to expect that you're going to be asked to leave.
Also, the Romulans wind up having three warbirds in this, you know, like two more of them decloak, and the Enterprise is pretty clearly outnumbered, outgunned.
They brought piss to a shit fight.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. And so I don't know why the Romulans show their hand, you know? Like the Enterprise has to fold. So why do the Romulans show that they were, in fact, spying on the Federation? Like, that's bad spycraft.
Are you arguing that they should have kept the other ships cloaked and baited the Enterprise into firing on the divorce?
No, I'm saying they should have never revealed that T'Pel was spying. They should have just been like, yeah, like, well, we've got her now. And
well, I feel like up until now, the Romulans have never missed an opportunity to give double middles to the Federation.
Okay, fair enough.
And I think they really enjoyed this, even though they didn't have to.
Yeah, always a game of chess with them. Game of chess where you pick up a piece, move it, take your hand off the piece, and then change your mind.
I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
So Picard basically just has to admit that he got his pants pulled down on this one, and they head home, they turn heel, and leave the neutral zone. And the end of the episode is a wedding scene where Picard performs a Japanese wedding ceremony between O'Brien and Keiko, which is pretty fun. You know, Data is the father of the bride. I guess Geordi is the best man. Fun to see O'Brien in his dress uniform.
As an actor, when you get an alternate piece of wardrobe, I think that's a good feeling as far as your longevity on the show.
Especially when you know that those uniforms cost $3,000, right?
Yeah. Ben, did we have any reason to think that we would be here, though? Like, what was the cause for them to put the wedding back on?
To turn it around?
Yeah. Like, that felt very flimsy to me.
Yeah, like where they left it was Data visiting Keiko in the Arboretum and trying to like talk some sense into her at O'Brien's request, and her basically saying like, "What the fuck is wrong with you? Leave me alone." Yeah, like it. I mean, I guess maybe the idea is that since it's from Data's perspective the entire time, there would presumably be a lot of stuff happening that he wasn't really privy to.
Well, when you're planning or involved in a wedding, I find that being coldly rational about all the decisions surrounding it is probably the best strategy. And I think Keiko finally comes around to this way of thinking.
Sure.
She sees O'Brien. She sees his wildly successful career. She's looking to climb up the professional ranks. She sees
a man with two pips.
Yeah. Yeah, she doesn't have any pips.
Yeah.
She wants a seat at the table.
Yeah.
She's willing to marry into it. I mean, it's clearly not for love. They have nothing in common.
Mm-hmm. The penultimate scene is a quiet one with Data walking into Six Bay, and Picard is standing looking at a newborn baby that was born while the ship was nose to nose with three Romulan warbirds. And it sort of feels like Picard turning over a new leaf on his thoughts about children being on board, because he's like marveling at the fact that a baby was born while they were nearly pulverized by their enemies. And, you know, no misgivings about that situation at all.
Yeah, this feels way against type, because he still reads to me as a guy who would hold a baby, like, with arms outstretched. looking for someone to hand it off to as soon as possible.
Yeah.
So while the scene is very sweet and nice, it doesn't play for me as in keeping with this character.
Yeah.
And another example of how close a bunch of babies were to just getting killed. Like,
yeah, exactly.
That's exactly. A subtext, too.
So last scene is Data heading back to the bridge and taking over for Worf and putting the bridge back on nighttime mood lighting. And the ship heads off into the night.
The first couple strums of Bob Seger's Night Moves plays them out as they cruise down the road.
Yeah. Man, you are just looking for drops that can get us sued at all times.
I don't know. Would you want to work the night shift?
I mean, if I'm Data and I don't get tired, I feel like night shift is pretty chill probably, right?
It's cool to see the idea of night and day shift, but what I really want to see is like mid-conflict.
Yeah.
Like they have to do a shift change in the middle. Like... Hold that thought, Tomalak. We got to swipe out some of our bridge crew here. I've got to sign off on their hours.
Yeah.
And then we got to bring a new security guy in. I'm sure you understand this administration stuff. God.
Yeah, I mean, the Federation has furloughed a bunch of people, and they've put a major restriction on overtime. So, like, we literally, like, they cannot stay on the bridge. Like, just give us five. Like, don't let your torpedoes go before we get these guys swapped out.
I mean, if I'm being honest, you'd be doing us a favor by destroying us right now. I mean, it's just a disaster of paperwork over here.
Yeah.
Did you like this episode, Ben?
I did. I liked it a lot. I think so much of the time we get to see everything that happens in the ready room, everything. Like, we get to know what Picard is up against when he's making decisions. And it's really interesting to imagine being one of the little people on the ship that doesn't get to be privy to any of that stuff. And you know, Data's definitely not one of the little people, but he's not in the room every time that the shit is popping off, and it makes for lots of fun thought experiments. Like, what is it actually like to live on this ship?
Yeah, I agree. To me, like, the whole episode's about perspective, right? Like, you've mm-hmm. got the perspective that Data has on his life and his relationships, but also in a weird breaking the fourth wall way, the perspective of how a ship operates. And it's sort of like, it's super headcanon-y, right? Because if you were to walk into the writer's room and just start flipping out story ideas, like, I feel like a few of them would be like, is there a barber shop, for example? Like,
yeah.
We talk about the Arboretum all the time. What does that look like? Like, it feels like it's like a tattoo, right? There's like the dark lines, but then there's the shading. Like, we're starting to shade the world a little bit more with these different scenes and these additional characters in an interesting way.
This episode is just chiaroscuro all the way down. The light and the dark, Adam.
Yeah, so I liked it too. And it felt so different from every other episode. It felt like it could have been made by completely different people.
Yeah.
Maybe the most bodily episode of all bottle episodes. It's the Nebuchadnezzar of bottle episodes.
That's a big bottle.
Yeah. Is that the biggest? There's a bigger one. I can't remember what the biggest is.
Magnum's smaller than a Neb, right?
Methuselah? Is that the biggest?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay, well, we'll save that for another time.
Yeah. Adam, I think we have a priority one message coming in on subspace. Should we go check that out?
Yeah, let's do it.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we have a priority one of a very personal nature Feels extra personal because we are in the same room recording this Priority One. I hate to admit that, but it's true.
Avert your eyes.
This one is from Josh K. It's to Adam and Ben. Now here's the message. Love the podcast, best banter around. I also love the McLaughlin group and have been thrilled to hear it become a mainstay of this fantastic show, but please pronounce it correctly. I wouldn't want John McLaughlin to roll over in his grave. However, if your McLaughlin pronunciation is intentional, like Six Bay, please enjoy my money.
Ben, I actually watch the McLaughlin group. And I have for many years. I was unaware that I was pronouncing it incorrectly.
I think that that's instructive of your disposition with regard to pronouncing anything correctly. And
what would Marina Surtees have to say about this?
Yeah, that's a great question. What would the Borgs do if they knew what we were doing to John McLaughlin?
An accusation like this just wants me want to book some time in Six Bay.
Yeah. I mean, this is this all feels like it's just been a charade from Jump.
Is that all of them?
This is all only ones I can think of right now. If you would like to waste money on a Priority One message, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. We will gladly take your money and obstinately continue to mispronounce things.
I don't see it as taking money at all. I feel like I've enrolled in a community college level linguistics class just now.
Yeah.
And
phonemes.
Yeah. I feel good about this.
Fricatives.
I hope Josh K does too. Thanks, Josh.
Yeah, thank you, Josh. And thank you for being pedantic in a way that helps us keep the show going.
that's the best kind of pedantism.
Yeah.
I really like how we do those. No one does them better.
We're real cards, I would say.
Hey, Ben.
Adam, what?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
I did, Adam. My drunk Shimoda in this episode, and drunk Shimoda is the award we give for the character or scene or concept that is having the most fun or just brightening up the episode in the way that Jim Shimoda did in episode 2. My Shimoda is very early in this episode, and it is Data's hairline. There's a the scene when he goes to tell O'Brien about how Keiko is calling off the wedding. He goes into 10 forward, and there's a single of Data, and his hairline moves back about an inch when he does some facial expression to explain how great this is going to be. So right at the 3-minute mark in this episode, there's just a beautiful shot of him saying, breaking the news to O'Brien, and as he puts a excited, positive look on his face, his whole fucking head shifts. It was just, I rewound and watched it like 3 times. I love it.
It's like that trick that Eric Estrada does, like the fake wig thing where he like grabs his hair and moves it around.
Yeah.
It's like that amount of movement.
Yeah, it's a full inch, if not an inch and a half, that his hairline moves back. It's like 10 years of male pattern baldness in one moment.
That's an extraordinary Shimoda, Ben.
How about yourself? Did you have a Shimoda?
I did. I think this show, for whatever reason, puts a great emphasis on the idea of like the tea ceremony. Mm-hmm. There's tea Earl Grey hot. There was Pulaski and Worf sharing the tea, and then in this episode, we come back from commercial on Troy preparing some tea for Data, because Data's got questions about Keiko calling off the wedding. Data rolls in there, and Troy, being a good host, brews some of her special tea, And the composition of this shot coming out of commercial is three quarters like above Troy, like basically down the front of her dress, and yeah. like two little teacups.
Yeah.
It was wildly like in the décolletage. Like it was boob tea time.
Yeah.
And Troy yeah. was making it.
Boob, and Earl Grey, hot.
It was just like, we talk about this a bunch, but like, come on, guys. Really? Like, we're not giving the female characters any character development. We're starting shots on their boobs. Like, please try harder. So to me, boob tea was my Shimoda for the episode.
Damn. I think those are two really good Shimodas.
Tomok and Jalad. Tanagra.
Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work. Some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean. With Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it going to be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it, and I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures every time you send one to it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVS at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Really strong boob tea. What do we have coming up on the next episode?
The next episode is season 4, episode 12, The Wounded. Picard must stop a renegade Federation starship that is making unprovoked attacks on a former enemy's ship. Ship. You remember that episode, Adam?
Ship. I do remember this episode because the captain of this renegade ship is the guy from Shawshank Redemption.
One of those that guys.
It's canonical redemption. I love this episode.
Yeah. He doesn't have the same accent, right?
Yeah. To my knowledge, O'Brien does not do his taxes and accounting either. That's not part of their relationship.
Have you seen the movie The Castle? or The Last Castle, I think it's called.
I don't think so, no.
It's a Robert Redford movie where he gets put in military prison and James Gandolfini is the warden.
Ooh.
It's real Shawshanky and in a good way, and it's a lot of fun.
Oh man. I'm looking at the movie poster and really makes me miss Gandolfini, because
yeah.
Few people have a scowl like him.
Yeah, it's a fun character for him because he plays this. He's like a very
status...
Oh, shit,
Delroy Lindo's in this. I love Delroy Lindo.
This movie's no joke. It's also, yeah. I think it's got Mark Ruffalo, maybe? Kind of an awesome cast. But Gandolfini's playing this commander who is in charge of this prison and is like obsessed with status and... his military regalia and stuff, and Redford comes in and he's like a disgraced general, so technically a higher rank than Gandolfini, but not in the context of this prison. And it's all about their status struggle, because Redford is like a natural charismatic leader. Gandolfini,
of course he is.
Starts losing his grip on things.
You can't have that.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
You got to have Gandolfini's ham hands wrapped strongly around his circumstances, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, we don't have any vetoes, so we can't watch The Last Castle instead of The Wounded.
I wouldn't veto this anyway. I think this is one of the great episodes.
Yeah, it's fun.
One of the ways that that our viewers let us know of our status... on the network we're on is by contributing to our show's production bin. Isn't that right?
Yeah. Yes.
They can go to MaximumFun.org/donate to make that passion known.
You can also go to MaxFunStore.com and buy a shirt. We're working on some new merch, which I'm hoping will be in there soon. But there's going to be some tour-exclusive merch on our tour.
Yeah, according to our schedule, this episode should be coming out on the first day of our tour. I hope we see you out there.
Yeah, and we should thank Dark Materia and Adam Ragusea for our music. Dark Materia made our theme song, and Adam Ragusea made the Priority One music bed and the Worf song that we sometimes use as well. Somebody emailed us and asked how they could find the Picard song. It's real easy. You just search the Picard song, and it's all over the damn internet.
Yeah, let me Google that for you.
I even searched in DuckDuckGo when it came up, and that search browser never works.
Well, people aren't listening to the end of the show because we say it every time.
Yeah. Another thing.
Who wouldn't want to listen to this?
Another thing that people won't hear because they've skipped past this is email us at drunkshimoda@gmail.com. This guy also didn't use our email address. He emailed Jesse Thorne.
Uh-oh.
Which is like, every time Jesse forwards us an email, like my heart sinks because it's usually somebody complaining. This guy was just like, how do I get that music?
Like... every message we get from Jesse might as well have the subject line long sigh, like
yeah. Thanks to Jesse and the folks at Max Fun for putting up with us, and with that we will be back at you next week with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and an episode of The Greatest Generation that's suffering from a real gnarly case of PTSD.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.